Wednesday, January 5th, episode 140. I'm losing track on these episodes here. It's 148, I want to say. I'm going to have to go back and make sure that's correct. But this is the Hezzy, and it's brought to you by basketballgods.net. I want to start Monday, Washington, Charlotte. I told you that game would be back and forth and spicy, and probably most of you were watching Memphis and Brooklyn, and we'll talk a little bit about that here in a second. But it was Washington and Charlotte going back and forth in a shootout. Kyle Kuzma, what do you have? 36-14, three threes in the final 90 seconds of the game to put the game away. Washington gets it done. Bradley Beal playing point guard because of COVID protocol. No Dinwiddie. I mean, both the guys are missing some people out of the roster. Charlotte's getting back right. But a couple thoughts on this. One, Kyle Kuzma is been pretty nice, man. He's had a couple game winners, some of them maybe not technical game winners, right? But shots that sealed the deal for Washington. He's become an above average defender. The three ball has come around, right? He's a nice player. And you could make the argument, like, let's just throw salaries out, right? Right now, would Washington trade Russ for Kuz straight up? Right? Like, you could argue Kuz alone by himself, never mind Montrezl Harrell and KCP and, you know, what else that came along with that package. Kyle Kuzma by himself has been a better player than Russell Westbrook this year. I mean, if you've been watching some Wizard games here, there's an argument to be made, right? One thing I will say about Washington that I've noticed is how come Brad Beal gets a pass in crunch time? Have you noticed? I'm not an analytics guy, right? So I don't have the clutch numbers, but it seems like no matter how hot Beal is during a game, we've seen him drop 50 pieces. He drops a 50 piece a couple times a year, right? He hasn't scored as prolifically this year. The percentages are down. I've seen some theories on that as far as is he healthy? Some stuff like that. The physicality shouldn't bother a strong player like him. He's just not shooting as well. Maybe he's defending more because the team is winning. Maybe his energies are more balanced, right? But it again, he could have a 50 piece going. The final 90 seconds, 2 minutes of a game, he's just awful. And he kind of gets a pass probably because he's in Washington and they don't win anyway. Like if Beal was, you know, with the Lakers or something like that, this would be a much more of a subject. But it's very strange that such a confident scorer that Bradley Beal is, and a guy that can create a shot as well as he can, struggles in the clutch as much as he does. But hey, now he's got Kuz to bail him out, who seems to thrive in the clutch. Again, he's had a ton of clutch baskets. 36 in taking care of the Hornets Monday night at home. Before I get into the Warriors Heat game from the other night, I do want to talk a little bit about this James Wiseman thing. We know Clay's coming back Sunday. I will go live on my Patreon pregame just to shed a tear. Nah, man, I think everybody's excited. It's just a big moment, right? But so Wiseman enters COVID protocol about a week ago. He's cleared out of it now. They've released some footage of him taking jump shots. It looks pretty good. I like that he doesn't have the happy feet. If you watched Wiseman leading into the draft and with his little trainer from Game of Thrones, Tyrion, I believe his name is, he had him doing like step back threes, a lot of guard and wing work, a lot of kind of fancy footwork that is so unnecessary for a player that size. When you're a 7-footer, part of the advantages are if you just stay fundamental, you can do what you want because you're a 7-footer, and especially with that athleticism. And so I liked that he was just shooting basic catch and shoot shots because I thought his rookie year he got happy feet. He tried to do a little too much on the catch with the shot particularly. But what I'm getting at it here is, what is the deal with him being cleared for contact? It feels like we're being told he's being cleared for contact next week for like the last month, right? And it just seems super arbitrary. How are they gauging when he's clear for contact? I know the meniscus is a dynamic injury, but are they charting his bowel movements? Are they like, James, are you feeling light on your feet today? Oh, let's clear you for contact. You've had four poops this week? Nah, you know me, I always take it to the potty mouth shit. But I just don't understand that. It feels, again, very arbitrary. And when they decide that, how are they gauging this? But again, they're saying he's a week away from contract drills. He was traveling with the team. I think he's traveled to Dallas today. So as excited as I am for Clay, I'm just as curious for Wiseman. All right. Talking about this latest Warriors win, Warriors Heat Monday at Chase Center, and you saw Jordan Poole go off. 32 points, 5 assists, 26 minutes off the bench. But I think everybody is talking about Steph Curry and his struggles here. You look at the shooting splits. I think I saw, you know, everybody can manipulate the numbers by how far they go back and what sample size they use. I believe the last thing I saw was it's the lowest shooting percentages in a 15-game stretch in Steph Curry's career. There is a lot of what ifs and whys, and hey, sometimes he's just in a slump. One of my longtime patrons, the Paradox, he says he's jumping too much right now. He sees that he's leaving his feet a little too much. It's hard to say, man. To be honest with you, when someone's in a shooting slump, when I do my breakdowns in my videos, a lot of the time I'll slow it down frame by frame and look at the jumper and stuff like that. With Steph, I don't really do it. It's so compact. It's such an efficient flick of the wrist. And then two, it's like, well, it's probably not his mechanics, right? It's not his mechanics. You doubt it. And I doubt it's his mechanics. He may be a little more, you know, what are the other theories? He's spending more energy on defense. Could be. Father time. Could it be father time catching up with him in the sense that he doesn't have the same amount of muscle endurance? Right? Because we talk about how active he is off ball, how much energy and stamina and conditioning he has. Could it be that? I don't think so. Not yet. Not at this age. Maybe at LeBron's age, you know, another 3 or 4 years for him, maybe. Everybody's body's different. I've heard the theory, is it the separation of his parents and the divorce of his parents? And you saw, you know, them apart at the big record-breaking night and stuff like that. It's very hard to say, man, but the reality of it is Steph is in a slump and the Warriors are still winning. Jordan Poole probably hasn't been as consistent maybe as everybody had hoped for. There was so much hype going into the season, but timing is everything, right? And if you noticed, Poole, along with Andrew Wiggins, who we'll get to here in a second, has his timing when he's had big performances has been very nice. He seems to sense the moment. And he sensed Monday night, all right, Steph is off. Let me go get going against my boy from Milwaukee and Tyler Hero. There was a little Milwaukee thing going on, and Jordan Poole got the better of Tyler Hero. Three ball was cooking it. And the scary thing is he's learning to become efficient within the system. And at the risk of sounding blasphemous, he looked like Steph on Monday night, right? It was very little dribbling and dancing with the ball. It was coming off screens. It was backdoor cuts. It was super efficient, man. And so someone had asked me, who you got, Hero or Poole? Because they're similar players, both from Milwaukee, both six-man, same size, you know, bucket getters. And I think Hero is allowed to cook more within the Miami system. I think Miami allows him, hey, ISO, go get yours more, which is fine. And so I'll say Hero is probably the better pure shooter, right? But I think what we're seeing is Jordan Poole is becoming more dynamic of a player. Defensively, I think he's got an edge at this point. And then again, learning to play within the system. We know he can get a bucket. You saw at the end, the signature Hezzy in and out. Yeah. Quite a performance, man. Quite a performance to go along. I don't want to leave out Andrew Wiggins here. I want to get to Wiggins. Those of you that have been following me for a while, you know I'm not an all-star campaign guy. I'm not. You don't hear me promoting all-star bids. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, look, if you're an all-star, you're an all-star. It is what it is. It'll speak for itself. You either make it or you don't. But every once in a while, there's a situation where I think a campaign deserves some attention. Because all the teams do it, right? All the teams for their top two players put out a campaign, part of their publicity. But the story of Andrew Wiggins is special. The number one pick, Air Canada. LeBron doesn't want him. He goes to Minnesota. He had, at one point, really been written off as probably the biggest bust, number one pick. Anthony, what was the kid from Vegas, UNLV, Anthony Bennett? He was, but outside of him, people, you know, Wiggins had the bust label. Oh, the worst contract, this, that. He has flipped the narrative. He's on the best team in the league, arguably one of the better two-way wings in the league. Look at the percentages. Look at the splits. But you have to watch the games, right? Because just like I was talking about with Jordan Poole, it's when he's contributing. He only is averaging 18, 19 points a game, right? You may look at the box score and say, okay, Wiggins, 5 rebounds, 17 points. But if you watch the game in its entirety, he had 7 of those points in the fourth quarter, and one of them was a 3 to completely swing momentum. He's been very clutch in fourth quarters outside of the other night in Denver. And, so Dub Nation, let's make it happen. Let's make it happen because, again, of the career arc of Andrew Wiggins. This is quite the turnaround and quite the story. He's truly deserving, and then the storyline makes it even better, right? That Wiggins has flipped the narrative, turned his career around, he's on a winning team, and he's fulfilled his destiny of becoming an all-star. So Dub Nation, you know, we got to click in those votes and get Big Vax A. Wiggs into this year's all-star game. The Heat put up a fight. You saw Jimmy Butler go down on the ankle. Very awkward ankle turn, man. I hope that he's all right. I haven't looked at the diagnosis. I'm assuming probably about a month, man. Probably about a month. My guy said he saw him walking just fine the next day in San Francisco. The thing is, even when you roll the ankle bad, you can walk all right, usually. The teams like to put you on crutches. Jimmy's a different type of dude, but it's going to be weeks because it was an awkward turn, so that certainly didn't help Miami's cause late in the game. And then you saw Draymond just put on a defensive clinic the final 3 minutes of the game with strip and rips, blocks at the rim, blocked a couple three balls coming out to the weak side. It was just... They say put it on tape. He may have put all he needs to on tape for his Defensive Player of the Year campaign Monday night. But I was watching this Heat team, and there are a lot of similarities between the Heat and the Warriors as far as their organizations go, right? They really do kind of have the same culture. They just have different philosophies and personnel. I think the Heat value toughness over basketball IQ, where the Warriors probably value the IQ over the toughness. And then, of course, the Warriors have the system in Steph Curry. But I think there are a lot of universal beliefs and operations between both these teams where you see these dudes, they also, it seems, to get the best out of these role players and journeymen. Caleb Martin, the Gabe Vincent kid, Yusufin, right? Undrafted guys. They were making a big deal about all the undrafted guys on this Heat's roster. They keep undrafted dudes. They've found diamonds in the rough for a long time. That's something that they do. And it also seems like when a role player or journeyman show up to either Miami or Golden State, all of a sudden you look at Otto Porter, right? GP2, they, for whatever reason, are able to maximize the talent of these guys. So the Heat hung on, valiant effort, but another one bites the dust at the Chase Center. I want to talk about this Grizzlies team. I've watched them play twice this week on the road, first in Brooklyn. Kyrie's making his debut tonight, right? I believe they're in Indiana, right? It's got to be on the road. Someone had brought this up to me as well. I got to start giving my patrons credit because that the community that we've built there is, there's a lot of dope, smart takes. But someone, I can't remember if it was in the Discord or just in a message, in a comment, but they were like, listen, I think they're bringing Kyrie back just to trade him. And at first I was like, no, you know, I had spoken on that KD, the connection, all that, right? But you watch Brooklyn against Memphis the other night in Brooklyn, and they might just be bringing Kyrie back to trade him because they just don't have enough. Brooklyn doesn't have enough size around these three guys. It's diminishing returns. And you saw Memphis just big boy them, just bullied them all over the glass and took care of business, really blew them off the floor. Grizzlies are impressive, man. So last night on the back end of the back-to-back, now they're in Cleveland. And the marquee is Evan Mobley versus Jaren Jackson Jr., the two young modern bigs, right? But they have different styles. I think Mobley is a little more traditional. I like Mobley, although it's such a small sample size. I like his shot selection better than Jaren Jackson. He's more comfortable playing with his back to the basket, and the way he tries to finish in the paint and stuff, you can tell he was coached up as a more traditional big man, where Jaren Jackson Jr., he still is trying to play like a guard. Now, he struggled in Brooklyn. They had him on KD for most of the night. That didn't help things, but had a big game last night against the Cavs, and it was interesting to see that length. And you saw Ja struggle with the length of those 3 7-footers in the first half getting in the paint. But what it did was it kind of allowed Jaren Jackson Jr. to play like a guard, like he likes to. And he was hitting the three ball. He's been getting downhill more. You saw him bully Mobley a little bit physically. He still tries to finish like a guard even when he gets downhill. Euro steps and floaters. He's got pretty good touch. But I'm curious to see the evolution of Jaren Jackson Jr. I've been tough on him because he's so talented. And, you know, just don't fall in love with that three ball, because if you watch him shoot the three, it just always feels like he has too much of his weight going forward. He's always leaning in over the line almost and off balance. But he hit it last night. Down the stretch, I love that Cleveland went to Mobley. You know, they were giving him post touches. He didn't always come through. And late to tie the game, high pick and roll, Garland Mobley, just textbook finish, little jump hook in the paint off the roll. That's just what you got to do, right? They give Bickerstaff the extension. So now he can balance development with winning. And I thought that was good. They need to give him those reps. Not sure if that happens if Sexton is involved there, right? But we'll talk about him in a second. But ultimately, Ja, man, you know, the tough thing about this Memphis team is you can't fold them. You just can't fold them. And it starts with Ja Morant, right? They're just, are they the toughest team in the league? I might call them the toughest team in the league. And what's so special about it is they're so young. Right. And so they battled, and Ja at the end of the game just did what he did. Not only does he have the clutch gene, they're spooky, man. Listen, it's early still in the season, right? 35 games in or whatever. If you start jolting for positioning and play, you'd start talking about playoff bracketing. If I'm Golden State, never mind Utah or Phoenix, I'm trying to stay on the other side of the bracket from the Grizz. Like, let's just call it what it is, man, because they're tough. You saw, you know, they didn't even have Dylan Brooks. Desmond Bane continues to impress. Cleveland was impressive, though. I don't know about that one, right? But the one thing that I will question about the Cavs moving forward is they need a fire starter. I had just brought up Colin Sexton, right? And he was their fire starter. He's there because the Cavs are full of cool customers. They're all cool, calm, and collected. Garland, Mobley, Jared Allen. They need kind of they're missing a core. I don't know what's wrong with him, but they're all the same type of personality. You need some, you know, you need a Draymond. You need maybe Rondo can bring that right now, but in his age, he maybe isn't that guy anymore. I don't know how they balance that out. That's the one thing I think they're missing is they need that fire starter personality, that talker. They're all kind of quiet killers in Cleveland. But let me ask you this. You can at me on Twitter. I'll put the poll in the Spotify version of this, or hit me in the comments on YouTube, even if it's not part of that video. Whose young core are you taking? You could argue Memphis and Cleveland have the two best young cores in the league right now. Whose are you taking? Now, you may look at Garland and Mobley and say, I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know who you're taking. I'll tell you what. If Zaire Williamson, the kid from Stanford, he looks pretty big out there, right? If he hits two, then, you know, then it may be not even be a question. I think I got to go Memphis, though. As much as I like Mobley and Garland, I think Memphis has more. Like, I like the Garland-Mobley duo the best, but you're talking Bane, Jackson Jr., Brandon Clark was contributing, Dylan Brooks, so... Yeah, man, Memphis. The other thing that I want to add here that I forgot was moving to the East, because Cleveland is kind of like Memphis East, right? The two surprise teams in the league, two teams that play big with two bigs on the floor a lot, just like Golden State needs to avoid the Memphis side of the basket. I won't say needs. That's a strong word. And I know that no team will acknowledge that. I understand that. No team's going to say, hey, we're trying to duck this team. But we all know it happens behind the scenes. Brooklyn needs to avoid the Cavs side of the bracket. Just stylistically, the size, I think it's a problem for them. And you look at, well, who would they trade Kyrie for and how can they balance out this roster in Brooklyn? You know who would have been ideal? Jared Allen. Jared Allen, right? What is he, a top five big now, right? He's an all, talk about all-star bids. Jared Allen, he's there. He's there. So last night, how many of you caught that Lakers-Kings game? I caught the second half. You saw Buddy Hield and LeBron going back and forth from three. And I'm looking at, they got Damian Jones out there on LeBron for like extended minutes, right? And I'm thinking, oh, is Harrison Barnes in COVID protocol? Like, what's going on here? And then Barnes, out of nowhere, and Fox check back into the game with like 6 minutes left in the game. And I'm like, what? Because I tuned in late in the third. And I'm not going to sit here and act like I know Sacramento's rotations. I don't think Sacramento knows their rotations, right? But just, are they tanking? Is that what Gentry is doing? Because just the strategy from Sacramento at the end of that game was just nuts. Was just nuts. I do got to say, Laker hate aside, I'm happy to see Malik Monk shine, man, because I think that for whatever reason, and maybe he's partially to blame, maybe he wasn't mature and ready enough in Charlotte, but he was kind of buried in Charlotte. Malik Monk, very talented, exciting player. You remember it, he was at Kentucky. So he goes off, he's hitting threes, and LeBron puts it away. I know there was some controversy late with the refs. They weren't going to win that shit anyway. But I guess the bigger news story was there is footage of Jeannie Buss talking with Buddy Hield before the game, shaking hands and having a little conversation. We all know the Lakers have flirted with the idea of Buddy Hield before they went and got Russ. How about Anthony Davis for Harrison Barnes and Buddy Hield? I haven't even looked in the trade machine. I'm just throwing this out. I know it's wild. You go, oh, whoa. Is there draft picks involved? Maybe. You fit contracts in and around it to make it work, but that's the framework of the deal. And it would be the Lakers operating under the assumption like, look, how old is AD? 27, 28 years old? The reality of it is his best days behind him? You could make that assumption. One could say that. So they're like, all right, we're going to move off him. Harrison Barnes can play the four, stretch the floor. And then you saw what Buddy would do with LeBron. That's like an ideal pairing. That's like a souped up Mo Williams for LeBron. And then if you're Sacramento, I mean, fuck it, right? Like, what you got to lose? Y'all ain't doing nothing anyway. You now operate under the assumption, all right, we're going to dust AD off and really let him be the man and hope that he still has a good, because there is a chance, right? They're taking the gamble that he's at 27, 28. He could have another 5 or 6 years left of as being an all-star. You just got to keep him on the floor. But yeah, I don't know. That's what ran across my mind after seeing those shenanigans in that game. What do we got tonight? Again, the debut of Kyrie. Be interested to see. He's a magician. I expect for Kyrie to look like he hasn't missed a beat. Maybe, you know, there may be a little missteps here and there, but he's going to pick up like he never left off as far as getting buckets. This is The Hesitant, brought to you by basketballgods.net. I'm out, y'all.